5208 Media.
And now, on with the show.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Film Fracas. Everyone was very quiet.
We made it.
Shannon looked over at me. Welcome to week two of our Best Picture winner season.
Yay.
I will admit, we just for context of when we're recording this, we just found out that Kobe Bryant has passed away. And
yeah, super sad.
Weird, dark mood in the room. So yeah. We're going to address it. Just say rest in peace. You know, our thoughts and prayers go out to his family.
So one of the best athletes in the NBA.
Oscar winner.
Too, and an Oscar winner.
You know,
go watch Dear Basketball right now.
A fantastic short.
It was really good.
That being said, that's not going to stop us from talking about our fantastic remaining seven films. As always, I'm Robbie DeShazer. Or are we going to do nicknames this one?
We had some pretty good ones.
What did we have? I'm trying to remember.
Somebody was. I was. La La Land, and or somebody was La La Land, and then Moonlight.
Oh yes,
no,
Carter,
that was you. That was you.
Were, yes, you were. Oh, it was Shannon. La La Land. No, wait. I'm sorry. I have the wrong envelope.
I have the
Moonlight.
Wrong envelope.
Widener.
Yeah. I don't remember mine.
The Ghost of River Phoenix.
I feel like it's always the Ghost of River Phoenix. I'll learn to be happy with it.
Yeah, you sound kind of off the cuff.
I was feeling very
good.
Improv-y.
That's the thing. I thought they were pretty good.
I don't remember what.
Well,
hey guys, it's me, Brett.
Hi, Brett.
Hey,
Brett is here.
Joining us again.
Maybe I'll remember the mid-episode, or during the break, I'll go back and listen to our last episode. But I'm here with Carter Spilliards at CA Spilliards on Twitter.
Hello, we can come up with one.
At CA Spilliards on Letterboxd.
Yes.
What a
cross platform.
Silent Walrus on Spotify.
Whoa, we're doing the plugs at the top.
Yeah, why not?
Holy shit!
Not like recommendations and stuff. We'll do.
Yeah.
We can Oreo it. Plug it at the top. Plug it at the bottom.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, that's fine. We can Oreo it.
It's a good username, so I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Zed's Dead 5 on Letterboxd. Shannon Widener is in the house.
Hello,
as
everyone.
Always. Yeah. And the Ghost of River Phoenix at River Phoenix on Twitter.
No, it's at Bomb Ass
Bomb
Phoenix.
River Phoenix.
No,
Bomb Ass
Phoenix.
At River Phoenix bombed me.
Nope. Also not that either. Definitely not that.
At Bomb Ass Phoenix on Twitter and Letterboxed.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's linked to my Twitter, so I think it has to be, right?
I don't know. And me, I'm.
I didn't make it. I just linked it.
I'm Robbie DeShazer at Robbie DeShazer on Twitter at Robbie5208 on Letterboxd. I'm gonna try and be better about using Letterboxd this year. I had realized that one of the last things I had actually like ranked or like given a review to was The Favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it's. Been
I mean,
a
I.
Bit.
I did my lists. I think I've decided I'm only gonna do like things I haven't seen before or like. New releases in the theaters. I just can't keep up with like every time I just put on something, you know.
See, I was doing that, and then this year I'm doing the opposite. I'm actually logging everything I've ever watched or I'm watching this year, because when I got my stats at the end of the year, they were all out of whack because I'd only logged the new things I had watched, not everything I had watched or rewatched. And so it was like, oh, you only watched this many movies this year, and I was like, that's incorrect. I know I watched more.
Yeah, I just got to get in the swing of like actually thinking about using this. Yeah.
It's a great,
honestly, dumb social media.
I still don't have Pro. I feel like a peasant.
You don't need
a
Pro.
Pleb?
Yeah, I feel like a pleb.
It's pretty nice.
It is. Nice.
You can clone those lists. Mm-hmm. You don't get the ads.
I know.
It's a beautiful thing.
I'm just over here.
And you're supporting the wonderful people at Letterboxd the way over in New Zealand.
Oh, well,
that's where it's based.
Yeah. That's cool.
And
there's like five people that work.
Oh, I should
job,
say,
NZ.
I was very proud of myself. Last night, I was able to change my PlayStation Network name for the first time.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I got that, Epcot-Ball as my,
nice.
Which I had assumed was probably already taken.
Mm-hmm.
Was not.
Your PSN name is Epcot-Ball?
Yeah. Epcot-Ball. Why not, Phoenix?
I mean, I guess I don't have a reason why not.
Exactly. You can't use like any part of your real name on PlayStation.
Right, yeah.
Interesting.
So I was like, I don't have any like usernames that aren't Robbie DeShazer or Robbie5208. Like,
yeah.
I was like, well, what do I do then?
I don't really know how I feel about the Epcot ball, because the last time we went to Disney World, my family got like stuck in the Epcot ball ride.
In Spaceship Earth, yeah.
Yeah, Spaceship Earth stopped like three different times, and I just remember being kind of near like the animatronics of the printing press and like all of the models, and I'm like, yo, this is where somebody like lunges out, slashes my throat, and I'm stationary in the car. I was like, all at Disney World, I'm like, ugh. But the rest of Epcot is fantastic, wonderful place.
Some of us don't have those fear of animatronics and would gladly be killed by one.
I don't.
Some of us want to die and Robbie, love Disney World.
I mean, I feel like that would be a really good way to go for some people, but that...
Yeah. I mean,
but also,
animatronic death.
Those stops happen a lot because it's an omni-mover attraction. The cars are supposed to be always moving, but...
If I'm getting stuck in a ride, it's going to be the dinosaur ride.
That's worse. That dinosaur might eat you.
That would be fine. I'm like, it makes sense to me. Like, it's going to happen, but it's
okay. Yeah.
But you don't want the ancient Phoenicians to get you?
No, the ancient Phoenicians better hop off. I don't need them.
Yeah. But yeah, so anytime someone with like a wheelchair or like any kind of disability has to get on, it either slows down or fully stops to allow that person.
Interesting. I thought it was not an actual...
It's not a breakdown. It's truly just like...
That makes me feel a little bit better then. I thought that it was kind of like... I was like...
No, it's not breaking or like... I mean, sometimes it is, but usually if that happens, they'll turn on the lights and like send people to come get you.
Okay. I feel like the best place to meet... like your doom would be in Tomorrowland, because at least it could feel like it was in the future, and what so it feel like you'd feel older, like it was like an age death.
Oh,
you're right. When you die, and what the 60s thought the future was,
yeah. You're like, well, I feel kind of space agey. Like yeah. I lived, it's fine.
I lived a full life. I got to see when cars are flying or whatever. Like whatever's in Tomorrowland.
I think that's thinking positively.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah, it's an optimistic view.
It's all about your point of
perishing
view.
Perishing in Disney.
I just want to die on the teacups and go limp and just fly out.
You're like, I'm done. We're good.
Just my body leaves, launches into a family of four.
In the end, aren't we all just tea and floating in teacups in this crazy world we call the universe?
This crazy world we call the universe.
Yeah. I love the universe worlds. Sorry for the listeners if I sound a little nasally. I've been coming off of a sinus infection. This is the first day I actually feel pretty good, but it's still lingering a bit, so
sorry. Not the coronavirus confirmed. Sorry,
I sound deep. Not the coronavirus, hopefully.
Wow, Phoenix. But, and I just started coughing this morning. Wow. So
hell yeah.
Just passing it off to me, I guess. No, I feel fine. I'm just
thumb fracas now brought to you by Cheers coronavirus. To
Yeah.
Coronavirus and Pedialyte.
Ooh. All this being said, places we would die in Disney World aside, we got seven movies to talk about.
Yeah. And our category this week.
Yeah.
Well,
do you want to list our seven movies that we have remaining?
I guess.
Well, last week we lost Grand Hotel.
Yeah. We lost Grand Hotel. We were talking about best cinematography. I liked that episode. It was good. I thought
a lot of good conversation.
Thank you for listening. It was a very long episode.
So I also liked it, but it was good. We have remaining, we'll just go in whatever order. We have On Waterfront, Birdman, Rocky, Chicago, The Departed, The Godfather, and Schindler's List.
What a fantastic lineup. Did all these movies win Best Picture? They're all very good.
Yes, they did all win
Best Picture. I think they all did.
Fun fact.
Grand Hotel did too, right?
Yeah, Grand Hotel did win Best Picture.
Could have fooled me.
Wow. It was
damn. Shots
they
fired.
They didn't deserve
Shots were
that.
Fired. Tea was spilled.
So were you not a fan of it? Yeah.
I didn't like it.
Wow. We'll talk about that off air.
Carter, how about you make a Best Picture?
How about I make a Best Picture?
Yeah.
How about you make a movie?
Before you talk shit on the mic.
I'm going to make the Best Picture.
But go back in time.
It's going to be a picture of...
Van Gogh's Starry Night.
Yes.
The Best Picture.
I'm going to take a photo of Starry Night.
I'm going to take a picture...
And it's going to be the Best Picture.
I'm going to stand in the back of the Louvre and take a picture of all the people crowding around the Mona Lisa with their phones. And I'm going to take a picture of that and say that's art.
I'm going to take a picture...
It's a comment on society.
I'm going to take a picture of your picture of that.
That is art, actually.
That's the real commentary.
What about the picture of that soldier guy and that girl and then the end of World War II and they're kissing in Times Square? That's a good picture.
Phoenix found the best picture.
Congratulations.
What did I win?
A toaster.
Oh, dope. I need one.
You need one? Do you need a toaster?
Yeah, buy a toaster. I need toast. It's an open a flame and a there. Slice of bread.
Fuck just off.
Do with it what apt. You will.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we've looked at our movies.
Yeah.
What's the category?
We got a challenge this week.
This week, we're talking about best performances. So sometimes we've talked about best leading, like best lead character or, you know, actor or actress. This time we thought we'd be all inclusive of the acting performances in each movie. So you're looking at supporting characters, bit parts, lead actors, lead actresses, just kind of everything in the realm of how well are the performance, like how good are the performances in each of these movies. And it's not, you know, it's not necessarily a, you know, oh, this movie has a better lead actor than this movie kind of thing. It's more of a much more holistic look at the whole movie and the performances therein. And then, you know, there are obviously standouts. And so we can talk about that.
Yeah. Which I think is a good like middle ground, because to keep with our Oscar like theme, we didn't want to do best actor, best supporting actor, best actress sort of like weeks and weeks in a row. But this way we can talk about all of it.
We would have to have far too many movies.
We don't have that many movies.
Yes. Yeah. This way we can kind of, you know, talk about all of it.
One day we'll get to the MCU. Our 6-month season. All 22 movies.
I think it's just that's got to just be a bunch of double eliminations, right?
Probably.
We could do it in like 2 months.
Or
we could not.
We could just not do that.
I mean, I'm ready for Star Wars Redux.
I'm sorry. Why are theme parks being talked about in our Oscars?
That's right. We season? Do have one very.
I did just mute you.
Theme parks.
We talked about theme parks earlier.
That's true. We literally talked
set
about
a precedent theme parks. For theme park talk. I'm doing a hard pivot. This is theme park practice.
Well, I was talking about Tomorrowland the movie.
Anyway. You'd hate to die in the movie Tomorrowland.
No, I think it'd be ideal.
It would be ideal.
He wants to die.
I mean, if George Clooney's there.
I feel like I'd live a long life because it felt like a long movie and I was like towards the end of my life.
I've actually never seen that movie. Is it?
It's super existential.
It's not great.
It's not great.
It's not great. I wouldn't say it's Terrence Malick, like Disney made movie.
It's Damon Lindelof.
Yeah, it's Disney.
Or Damon Lindelof.
No, it's Brad Bird, isn't it?
And Brad Bird directed it.
Yeah, Lindelof wrote it with Brad Bird.
Really?
It's a weird movie. I don't think I necessarily hate it, but I
don't dislike it.
I wouldn't recommend it.
I'm mostly mad that it didn't do well, and then we didn't get a refurb of Tomorrowland because of it.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that is kind of
like,
sad.
If it had done well, they would have like actually like cleaned up that place, and it would look nice. But yeah,
it's weird. It's a movie that you don't, you think you know what the movie's about, and then you watch, and you're like, oh, I had no idea that it was going to be about this.
Yep. But we should get talking, because we've done like 15 minutes on this stuff already. So.
Oh, yes.
So we went in chronological order last
Let's
time.
Go reverse chronological order.
Okay.
Let's start with Birdman.
Birdman.
The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
I tell you, this is a strong one.
It's got some really good acting performances. Oh,
yeah. There is a lot of acting in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, really quite enjoy it.
There's actors acting in the movie.
As actors.
Yeah.
And there's actors just being themselves.
It's a particularly strong one, I think.
Yeah.
Michael Keaton turns in, I think, a career best.
Oh, absolutely.
I believe he was
Have you seen The Founder?
Have you robbed? Seen Mr. Mom?
He was robbed.
Mr. Mom is good.
Of that I love Oscar. Mr. Mom. It's actually very good.
Who beat him again?
Come at me, Eddie Redmayne, for your not that good performance as Stephen Hawking.
Oh, yeah.
A bad movie.
Right.
Yeah, not sorry, but that
and
is
a performance
not a good movie.
That was just okay.
Yeah. To bring in some of the IMDb knowledge I did yesterday, I was just going to say that Keaton, Norton, and Emma Stone all got nominated for Oscars. None of them won.
Yep.
But I figured I did that last week. I can do it again.
Yeah.
Bringing all this stuff in. Yeah, I agree. I think Keaton should have won over.
Keaton did such a good job.
Absurd when you watch it and it's like, oh, he didn't win for this. And yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. It's great. I feel like it's such a small cast, but I really enjoy like almost every actor in this, even down to like the, small role that the critic has in the bar. Like, I think her, which she performs to Michael Keaton in that scene and, like, just ripping him to shreds. Like, that's wonderful. And there's a lot of, like, it's a really small cast, some even small roles in this, but I think everyone really stands out and does a really good job.
Yeah, Andrea Riseborough, really, really good. Mm-hmm. And then I took me a minute to be like, Mandy was the other movie that I'd seen her in, and she was wonderful. I think one of my favorite things about Birdman that I hadn't realized until about 2-3 years ago was that, you know, of course, all of these main characters were in part selected because they had played comic book heroes in famous other iterations, and it tied in with a class I was taking, and we were watching Birdman and then the original Tim Burton Batman back to back. And so, like, you know, I love the fact that they were selected for that reason, and they had, you know, elements of this is what happens when you make a commercial film, and you know, the critical commentary on whether or not you're making art, or, like, you know, if your career is worthy because you're making something that's making money versus making something for, you know, art's sake or whatever. I really like that. Also, what is Zach Galifianakis?
I was going to say Galifianakis has very, very good. Fun role.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen a lot of his movies either, but I thought he did very good at grounding Michael Keaton's character and still managing to be, like, really funny in his role. It's always a treat to see him on screen. And yeah, I wasn't expecting to necessarily say that either. So great job all around.
Galifianakis is good when people, like, you ever watch Baskets?
He's
a great actor. It's just people kind of put him for one shtick from, like, the Hangover movies, which was funny in the first one.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he did the Hangover, and then what was the one he did with
Tired and Hangover 2
Robert Downey Jr.
Due Date.
Also basically the same character.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He really, I mean, in the same way that, like, some people were in superhero movies.
Yeah.
Galifianakis kind of, I mean, broad comedies, but not.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much done.
He had gotten known for a shtick in that.
Yeah.
You know, was that art? Was it, or was it just a paycheck?
I definitely think Emma Stone took the, like, superhero thing to an extreme because she was in the middle of filming Amazing Spider-Man 2. She, like, filmed all of her parts for this movie on, like, a break in the middle of filming Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
So she was literally doing a superhero movie and then went and filmed a movie critiquing that and then went back.
Yeah. Very fresh. Yeah. And I mean, I'm a big fan of Emma Stone in general, but I really, really love her character in this film, although sometimes she grates on me a little bit as far as being, you know, the disaffected, you know, daughter who's angry and edgy and whatever. But she does it so well. That's the thing. I really enjoy it. I'm a big fan of her whole, like, nothing matters, you don't matter, I set up your Twitter account kind of thing. But it works very well for me. I think she does quite a good job. I'm not sure maybe if it's her best. It might not be the best Emma Stone, but I think it's a very strong Emma Stone.
This is the performance that I probably take the most, like, objection. I don't know how to say it, but, like, I just... I mean, her biggest shining moments are... And some of it I do blame on some of the writing. Some of the dialogue is very... Oh, you know, you want to fuck me or what? You're just like, okay, like, this is... It's... I didn't love it. It seemed a little bit flat.
I will say some of the Ed Norton her scenes.
The scenes with her and Ed Norton are hard to watch for me. I mean, we talked about kind of the cinematography reasons. I don't love. Also, I mean, some of it is that Ed Norton's doing such a good job at being very unlikable that.
Props to him, but definitely.
At the same time, I don't love that, like, nothing matters, you don't matter scene, because she just kind of screams it. And I know that, like, this is kind of a big hot topic, like, talking point about, like, is yelling, like, acting? I know it's come up a lot in, like, critiques of Marriage Story recently, like, which I still haven't seen to, like, I haven't seen to, like, actually weigh in on, but, like, sometimes there is just to it. I work 40 hours a week to produce two podcasts. I can watch movies when I die, I guess. But, don't think about that too much, Phoenix.
I was gonna say, I don't know if you can. You'd be dead.
Just watch it before you go to bed tonight.
Maybe. We'll see.
See? That's why he hasn't watched it.
That anyway. I go to sleep at a reasonable time?
Exactly.
That's my fault, yeah. But to get to my... It's a lot of yelling that doesn't feel like it... I don't... And once again, I don't know if I can blame it on the writing. It doesn't feel like it has much building up to it. There's a lot of backstory that we're supposed to assume with those two characters in general. So I can't give it all, I can't say it's all like in the performance, but some of it is just, I'm like, yeah, this is acting, like, is where I come off with a lot of that. And I go, whereas I feel like there's some very nuanced performances in this. I think Galifianakis is turning in a very nuanced performance for like who his character is and like what he, there is that, some of that metatextual stuff with like being aware that all these people are, big Hollywood stars or, superheroes and stuff like that. And Galifianakis turning in something where he's like playing a deeper character than that, but also turning in a performance that you wouldn't expect from him is, and I'm not saying that necessarily like we need to pit those two performances against each other, but I think there's some people with some really good nuance in their performances, whereas Emma Stone has some very in-your-face moments that
very good for like clips of the actual trailer. I will say that I can see it being fodder for that kind of spectacle.
Yeah, I go back to I don't necessarily know that anyone's a weak link in this.
And I don't think it makes. I should go and say I don't think it makes the film worse. Or
I think Emma Stone turns in. I mean, a pretty solid performance. Mm-hmm. Her chemistry with Ed Norton isn't really there. I buy it with Michael Keaton. I think the kind of father-daughter dynamic is very authentic.
Yeah,
for sure. There, and that really comes through. Her scenes with Ed Norton are just kind of awkward.
I will say that now that I'm thinking about it, I'm factoring that in a little bit differently. Yeah. I think I like her operating in the world separately from.
And the thing with Ed Norton too is he's kind of playing like an extreme version of himself, which it also is like, how much credit do you give to that performance? Because it's good, but is he really having to reach?
Yeah, I mean, I've always disagreed with that. That was like a thing that I think ruined him from winning the Oscars. Like that kind of narrative kind of floated around during the campaign, and why I think ultimately he ended up not winning for this. Just because, like, I mean, I feel like sometimes we think we know actors when we don't know actors. So like, of course, like, he has the stigma of like being terrible on sets and stuff like that and being like a huge asshole or whatever. But like, I think it's weird that everyone just assumes like, oh, Edward Norton's playing himself. This is just who he is or whatever. It's like, we don't know who he is. He could be nothing like this. And then B, it's still like, even if it is himself, it's still like hard to play yourself in a role, like a lot, like it takes a lot of self-reflection, self-awareness, and like still trying to find like the person itself when you're playing.
Oh, yeah.
That's distinct from you, and like finding your character in the script in the first place, even if it is so close to yourself. That I think it's really challenging. I really love his performance in this. I also think he maybe should have won this year too. I don't remember the nominees as much that year, but I really liked Edward Norton in this. And
Amy Ryan also wanted to give a shout out to. I really enjoy the scenes between Regan and his ex-wife. I think they're done very.
Those are fantastic.
Very, very well, and I buy their estrangement very well, and whatever might still be lingering between them. Very compelled by that. I think it's done extremely well. So very good job to her as well.
Yeah. And I want to go back to something that Carter said, because I think it'll come up later, and I kind of want to get thoughts on this about when we're talking about performances, when we're talking about, reaching for something or doing something that's out of your wheelhouse or what you've been put into typically, do we think that that makes the performance necessarily like, because you said, I don't know if he's reaching there, but I think that if you're doing something that is, that is what you do best, but you're doing it at such a high level, I think that is still factoring into a fantastic performance, especially when we're talking about it in comparison, whereas like, there might be a performance in another movie where you're like, oh, this guy's doing what he normally does, but he's doing it at the highest level that he's ever done it.
I mean, it's definitely, it's not like a singular factor. I think it's just another layer that you can kind of discuss.
Yeah.
But it's not like a deciding if it's, because even if, if someone's playing a, like Robert Downey Jr., who, very much kind of embodies this character that he plays when he's playing Tony Stark. But just because he's not having to stretch that much for, for that occasionally, it doesn't mean he's turning in a bad performance.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. It's just another layer to look at and say, how much is this person, really reaching to get this added performance or an added layer of nuance to the performance or something like that.
If no one has anything else to say about this movie,
okay, I was going to say, just say one more thing. I think if I were to, I guess like critique it a bit. I will say
I just looked up who won Best Supporting Actor that year. It was J.K. Simmons for Whiplash, and I think he definitely should have won over Edward Norton.
Yeah, I guess that's
those
probably
are for Birds. Two
good performances, but
two career great performances.
But I'm definitely in the J.K. Simmons camp. And Rob Duvall for The Judge.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons was pretty good. Yeah, maybe it was closer.
Ethan Hawke in Boyhood was also great.
Sorry, what I was going to say was, I think one thing that I would speak maybe to like criticize or whatever about something I guess can maybe rub people the wrong way is that I know we talked about last week, or I did, about how I thought the stuff in Chicago, like the staging kind of affected the cinematography of things, and like how I preferred the cinematography in this, because it kind of gave people more room. I think the cinematography in this actually might affect the acting a little bit more, just because a lot of it is so orchestrated with like the camera movement and a lot of like the close quarters of the rooms and stuff like that, and a lot of close-ups that I feel like this is such a theater acting movie, and it's purposely theater acted, but I think it also can affect a lot of the actors from like a lot of those awkward moments where like there's some scenes that I think could have used more breath or could have used more like spacing or maybe more space in the frame to like really act out. Speaking more to, I think, Robbie's point earlier about Emma Stone and how she's just yelling into the camera and stuff like that. I think she also, to her credit, didn't have like necessarily the room or like the amount of time allotted to like maybe play that scene a little bit differently. There's probably like,
like a certain way they need to do that. Timing needed to just keep going.
Yeah, like to get the scene going, like because it's so focused on how the camera's moving, and then also definitely the framing in the shots as well. That I think that could affect it, and like that could probably be the problem that I can kind of understand you guys seeing. Like the cinematography affects their performances in a big way in this.
Yeah,
that is a.
Well, and that's and a, yeah, unique. And there's always something to you know with any movie. Depending on, it's in, the editing and the cinematography, the editing especially, depending on how they cut a shot, say there's a lingering shot on someone's face, you know, if they cut that too early, then perhaps, you know, the emotional beat isn't there. And so a lot of the editing process can really affect a performance, because they might have been giving a great performance, but if it's poorly edited, then you would never know.
Yep.
Right. And some acting is benefited by it. Like, like there might have been better cuts that they could have done had they shot it this way,
or a better take, and make it seem better here or there. Yeah,
definitely.
So it's a risk you run, but
someone else's curation of your work.
Yeah. Anyone else have anything else to say about Birdman?
No, not necessarily.
All right,
I think Phoenix summed it up pretty well.
Let's move on to
The Departed. The Departed would be the next.
Yes,
The Departed.
The Departed.
This one, my segue there was going to be talking about Jack Nicholson is doing a Jack Nicholson character throughout a lot of this.
Well. This one is, this is the difference. It's not necessarily playing yourself, but this is him playing a character that, or just a stereotype of like, this is a very Jack Nicholson character.
It is, but he's doing it very, very well.
He is doing really well, but that's also because he's just a fantastic actor.
Yes.
But
he's doing a character that I think, and this doesn't even wind up very high on my list, but like it, I think credit where credit is due. He's not phoning it in for this. He's not, and especially for some of his later films, there are some where he does a Jack Nicholson character without, you know, much extra thought to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, you know, a good pairing with an actor and a director can.
His pull last out. Great performance, The Bucket List.
Yeah, I feel like the Frank Costello character he's playing is like borderline Joker, Batman.
Almost. He's very cartoonish.
Yeah, it's super cartoonish and really like fun mobster guy kind of or whatever.
I'm a fun mobster.
Yeah, I have fun. This is an interesting one because it's got a bunch of talented and like a plethora of actors. I don't know if I would necessarily say any of them have like. This is like their best roles in it.
There's a lot of acting in this that I'm like.
Yeah. Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg is maybe the best performance in this movie.
He's the only one that got nominated for an Oscar.
Because to me, I'm looking at all of it and I'm like, this is not Leo's best work. This is certainly not Matt Damon's best work. This is not Martin Sheen's best work.
Not Jack Nicholson's. Not Alec Baldwin's.
None of it's bad. I think everyone is passable. But I don't think there's any particular standout aside from maybe Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who really gets a little more to do here than he normally does in his movies.
It also plays to his strengths because it's a hard-ass Boston guy, which is like
Mark Wahlberg. So it's once again, playing into
so much to
something very accessible.
Very accessible. Yeah. You know,
very
acquainted with.
Yeah.
Very loud, but it's, very brash, very good.
I don't actually love Matt Damon's performance in this movie that much.
This would be the only, his would be the only one I'm not a big fan of.
I don't particularly buy into his, like, his anxiety or like, oh no, I might get caught. And then he's never really menacing enough to be evil.
Yeah.
Vera Farmiga is as the love interest. Yeah. She's also very good.
No, I just,
she's okay. She's all right.
I liked her all right. But, and Leo too. And
I think Leo turns in a very excellent performance. And I think you have to, cause I'm just wondering what you're thinking here.
His is a little more in depth, to me, but like, you feel his highs and his lows, I think, a little more. Whereas with Matt Damon, it never really struck me. Like, I never felt he was in, you know, any great deal of danger. He never kind of communicated that or any kind of internal conflict or turmoil that his character experienced. Right. I never really bought into that much.
He seemed very closed off and inaccessible in a lot of that movie, which, you know, is not great if you're trying to make the audience believe in what you're, what you're trying to get by the end of this movie. And I think too that with Matt Damon's performance, I don't even see him being that upset if he gets caught. Like, it's not that he wants to get caught, but there seem to be, the stakes don't affect him in a measurable way for me to be, thinking that he'd actually be, extremely hurt, extremely upset, or abandoned in any way.
He very much operates as a plot device as well. He could be anyone who's feeding Jack Nicholson's character the information from the inside. It could be literally anyone or anything, and he doesn't add much to it to make the character his own.
He's somebody for Leo to be paired up against. Although I do really like Leo's performance.
I think Leo's performance is great.
It's not my favorite Leo performance, but I think it is still compelling because he,
In this movie, I don't think you have to take Leo's other performances into account.
No.
I think this one is just
quite definitely good. Yeah, it's definitely this one. For sure.
Although,
I mean, you mentioned it a couple times. I just wanted to make sure that, like, we're not, like, comparing it to the rest of
No.
Because, like, you're talking about, point. Oh, is this person, is it their career best? No, but are they doing well? Are they serving the script? Are they elevating this movie? I think there are performances that are 100% doing that in this.
The only outside comparison you can really make is if there's another movie that was made before this one. It couldn't be after. It'd have to be before in the same, like, time period that you can point to and say, I think he turned in, a crazy good performance in this one and then really phoned it in on this one. And you can kind of see that he had the capacity based on this performance to have brought more to that. But I don't think that's the case with anyone in any of these movies.
Other than maybe Damon, but Damon hadn't really done anything like this prior.
I mean, he was coming off of the Oceans movies.
Yeah.
Which is like...
He's fine in the Oceans movies.
So it's... I don't know that anyone's in that position. I'm just saying, if we were to compare anyone to a different performance...
Yeah. And the only other one would be comparing maybe Brando's between...
particular set of... But those are so far apart. It's 20 years. Yeah. There's 20 years between those. So.
That's our only example I have here. Yeah. Really any shared actors I can think of.
But we have a couple shared actors in the movies. But yeah, I think...
But no one that's turning in one that's like, oh, this is so much better than their other
overall role. Yeah, overall, I think, on the whole, the performances of the movie are just fine, but not,
I think...
I need to write home about.
I really, really enjoy DiCaprio's performance in this. I also, like, have previously stated, love Wahlberg in this. I think he has one of the best lines in cinema history.
He does.
So that has to.
But which one are you talking about? There's a couple that I can think of.
I mean, he's got a bunch of great ones, but my favorite is the who the hell are you? Or who the fuck are you?
I'm the guy who does his job. You must be the other guy.
Great line. Great diss.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe go fuck yourself. Oh, he's so good in this.
Yeah.
I mean, that exchange between him and Alec Baldwin that's so Boston, but so just. They do him. Both of those performances, I think, really, they filled out their roles. You can tell those guys both have backstories for their characters that aren't even written into the movie.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I also, I don't know, I wasn't quite gauging y'all's take on Jack Nicholson earlier, but I do like his performance.
I like his performance too.
I like it.
I think it's like it's so like it adds to like the kind of blockbustery feel of this movie. It makes it. This movie's already not like too serious in the sense of like it's so contrived of an idea that like I'd like that he kind of plays it with like a really fun, intense kind of like cartoonish mob villain person that like
he's still menacing without mustache twirling at any point where he's like
he like flirts the line very well that I think is like
and they set
notable.
Up to do that very well. I mean the opening scene in the diner, especially whatever words are exchanged between him and the teenage girl behind the counter. I mean it's stuff like that where you know he doesn't even have to speak and it's done really well, but the DiCaprio and Nicholson scenes, you know, are the anchor, I think, acting-wise, for this movie. I think about the when they first meet and he's trying to figure out if he's a mole, and he starts, like, you know, banging his arm on the table that's already broken and just, you know, going at it. It's done very well. I mean, directly menacing, but also.
Yeah, I would, I think, I'm with you guys on, like, Matt Damon not having such a strong performance in this.
I mean, it's no Ford v. Ferrari, but... anyway,
he acts more in Ford v Ferrari than he does.
I also think we're not comparing.
Yeah.
I also think
he's definitely just doing his best Tommy Lee Jones in Ford v Ferrari is what he's doing.
Yeah. I also don't love Vera Farmiga or Alec Baldwin in this. Mm-hmm. I think Alec Baldwin.
Thank you for saying that.
Super flat and boring. And
he's
I think
not really in the movie that
yeah,
much.
Yeah, she's not in it much, but I don't think even when he's in it, like he leaves a lasting impression. He just plays like. Police guy
he
or
says
whatever.
Microprocesses.
Yeah, microprocesses, and he beats that guy in the when the that's, thing doesn't go down right. That's
Jack
it.
Donaghy.
It could have been like anyone. It doesn't feel like it, like very Alec Baldwin like like power empowered, especially if you go to something else. But I mean, I don't want to pull in other stuff.
Yeah.
And then Vera Farmiga, like, I don't really buy either of her like love stories. I don't think.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they don't. Seem,
I buy her and Leo. But
I buy her and Leo a little more.
They have a real chemistry.
I don't know.
Well, the fact that like the source material for this film from a movie that I cannot remember.
Infernal Affairs.
Thank you. It was two women each, and then Vera Farmiga became the combined shared love interest between the two men. That's more of a story thing.
Which I think is a little soap opera-y that they're both with the same
with
woman.
With the same woman.
But that's not a performance. That's
exactly.
No, that's definitely
a writing thing.
Also,
just a comment.
Also, you know, a movie with 20 guys and two women, you know, you got to cut one woman.
Yeah.
Like, what if.
God forbid we have a third woman character in this movie.
God forbid we have two women and 20 guys.
Woman who's not somebody's mom or grandmother.
Yes. Can't have that. I don't think by the fact that she's like a really good psychiatrist. I'm like, they flirt in the meeting. She gives him exactly what medication he wants without consulting. I don't know. That just doesn't seem right. And then, they have an argument as they leave. He basically asks her out after she gives him the prescription that he wants. It just, there's a lot there that sets up their relationship that I don't know how.
I would say those are all story.
But then it provides this kind of forced chemistry that places them together that I still, like, building off of that, I don't really think is a huge believable thing between these actors. And it's not like they're doing a bad job. It's just I don't think it's believable when you shove these two people together in the same frame.
But
I think that all goes back to the same story issue that she's underutilized and that it's not...
I don't know. I'm with you that that's part of it, but I think even the scenes that she's in, I'm not even thinking there's potential in it. Because
I mean, when she's like answering the phone, I don't really know that might be a bigger scene for her, but I'm racking my brain to try and find anything else. So once again, that could be her character, but if I would have cast, I probably might have casted somebody else. Yeah. I don't.
Or like when Leo goes to her, I think, in like later on in the movie, and they have that kind of like, two scenes in her house or whatever. It just didn't feel like
romantic tryst.
It didn't feel like, oh, you're the person I'm connecting with, or it just seemed so forced that even if it was like, you can say it's like partially due to the writing, but I think also just in their chemistry, you could tell, like, it doesn't feel like a big, like, emotional moment. It feels like, oh, well, this is what we just got to do.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. And I think that's a separate issue from the story problems is really what it is. It's not all one complaint, but it is just, I think it is, you know, how they meet is a story problem, and I think it maybe creates a branch off of it that is a different problem.
And that's a lot of things but, with these movies, because all of these components are so intimately intertwined in the quality of these best pictures. But does anybody have anything else they'd like to add about the Departed?
No, I think we need to keep
going. Yeah, we need to move on to Chicago. This one is interesting because I give a lot of points here just for the, I mean, the sheer physicality of this, because they're doing their own singing, they're doing their own dancing. Yeah. And it's like, there isn't as much, I think, like dramatic intention in a lot of the roles, but you also just have to kind of give them points for the physical, like the performance they're giving, they're performing. In these numbers, and
I guess
and
I wasn't really taking into account singing or dancing, like as a
because that's that's part of the performance. If they can't sing or they can't dance,
then I took account.
Although I think there is still quality to be gleaned from their straight acting scenes. Some actors more than others, but
and I think you can definitely act and perform in a song.
And I'm not saying you can't. I just wasn't like. You know, I just because it was something that was so different from the rest of our stuff that I wasn't necessarily being like, oh, points for dancing when, you know, no one has a chance to dance.
I mean, it's just an element of physicality. It's one of those things where if you had a, like, I don't know, a track movie, some kind of where they're all running.
A sport movie? Like well, maybe but, Rocky?
I mean, you know, there's definitely, but Rocky's more staged in a way that's, I think, similar, but not exactly this. But if you had someone who's like, oh, they did, you know, or if you have like an action movie, it's like, oh, they did all their stunts.
That's true.
I think
it's
something kind of more akin to that.
Yeah, how you move your body is definitely part of it.
I'll just jump in real quick and say that Renee Zellweger was nominated, didn't win. John C. Reilly was nominated, didn't win. Queen Latifah was nominated, didn't win.
She should have won.
Catherine Zeta-Jones won, nominated and won. The only one that won in this. And I think she's really good in this. Kind of smaller role. I was actually shocked rewatching it that it was like not as prominent as I remember it being. Mm-hmm.
Well, she's all over the marketing. She's on every poster and everything. And when you think of Chicago, you think of Catherine Zeta-Jones and Renee Zellweger, like the two you think of, even though she's not actually in the movie that much.
Yeah, it's kind of it was kind of surprising.
Like Richard Gere, I think, almost has more screen time than she does.
Yeah.
And Richard Gere's singing is something.
Yeah,
it's existent.
But his
quality of noise.
It's certainly there.
I like his very kind of cartoonish, like stylized lawyer character. The whole movie, I mean, the whole movie's got a very kind of stylized
caricatures
of people.
I was going to say, like, I think, you know, sometimes I think just being the 23-year-old I am and like being a young person that. I think in the year 2002, and I'm like, what? That's not like 20 years ago. That like just happened or whatever. And then I see Chicago, and I'm like, oh, this was like 50 years ago. Like the cast of like Renee Zellweger, Richard Gere as like the main like good-looking lawyer guy. And then Catherine Zeta-Jones. I'm like, oh, this is dated. And I really do not like Richard Gere in this. I think he kind of works as he's really like sometimes he's like even that smiley kind
I like
of.
His I like his actual like dialogue scenes more than his like performance scenes.
Yeah, like him meeting up with John C. Reilly when they're going over the money and really seeing those two operate. I enjoy those scenes. I do enjoy those scenes.
I think I have problems with his like courtroom scenes with like he's trying to play like you know the funny quippy like
fast talking Chicago wise guy
and he's I don't think it's really landing like the humor. I think with like a stronger performer those like jokes would really stick and we would kind of be with a jury and like laughing along, but I think they just kind of come off as like they kind of like come off as really corny and kind of awkward.
Don't really with him.
Yeah, and I think it's just his delivery on it. So I'm not really a fan of his like comedic aspect in this movie.
Fair point.
I think it's kind of like probably my only really strong like dislike. Everyone else I think does fairly well.
I love John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly is a standout.
So yeah, good. Wonderful. His performance, too.
Queen Latifah is my good. Standout. When You're Good to Mama, I'm quite a fan. And I like the way she runs the jail as well. I think she does a good job.
I love Renee Zellweger.
Oh, without a doubt. Catherine Zeta-Jones is always.
Catherine Zeta-Jones is great, but.
Wins. Christine Baranski as well as Mary Sunshine.
Oh, yeah, she's fun. Yeah.
But never she does good in everything. Baranski. You really can't.
It's true.
She's a gem. Even Lucy Liu, mm-hmm. I think, does.
For her little bit.
For her 5 minutes.
Yeah.
when she, you know, as the pineapple heiress or mm-hmm. whatever, she does a very, you know, it's stylized, it's dramatized, it's, you know, funny, but also I think it works really well in the context of these other performances. Dominic West as the mm-hmm. The man who started it all. He's, you know, very skeezy. You know, quite a good actor. I think he was in the non-musical BBC Les Mis. Done a lot of good things, but I enjoyed him in his 10 minutes. I thought he was fine.
Yeah.
You know, I could definitely see why Renee Zellweger would have, you know, shot him and started this whole musical, but it works.
Yeah. Yeah, this one just kind of fell flat for me. I loved John C. Reilly, and the other ones, they all seemed fine to me. I don't have any reasons for it. They all were serviceable. Nothing was bad. Just I didn't think that there was anything that particularly stood out to me. It works. It's fine. Like, I don't have any complaints, but I'm listening to this, and I'm like, oh, I didn't love this. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I'm more in line with you, though. I do, like, appreciate Catherine Zeta-Jones a lot in this as well. And then
I think she's fine.
I also enjoy enough of Renee Zellweger's performance.
Yeah.
Then everything else, I'm just like, yeah, serviceable, I would say.
You like John C. Reilly.
Yeah, yeah. But he also did. I just meant, like, I'm in line with him with that.
Yeah.
And so
those three, I
think your complaints about Richard Gere actually are very apt. Like, just... Yeah.
He's one of the biggest characters that I think has the, you know, largest question mark.
And I think there's a reason, like going to your last point about when's the last time he's led a movie.
Yeah.
I think there's a reason why this is one of his last times.
Yeah. He ran out of gerbils.
I think.
Oh.
I was talking to someone about, and I was telling him what we were talking about, what movies and stuff. And they were like, yeah, I remember when that movie came out and they were like, man, Richard Gere learned to tap dance for this movie. And it was like, well, why wouldn't you get someone who could act and tap dance? Because
they exist.
It was like, they exist, and he didn't turn in a good enough performance to necessarily warrant, like, taking the time to learn to tap dance. Like,
yeah. So. I think, yeah, like I said, I think he's better suited in the more kind of dialogue character scenes, the dramatic moments. Not as much in the actual, like, singing, dancing department.
Which is fine. I just, I don't always buy it mm-hmm. in his, like... Especially those courtroom scenes.
Yeah.
But
it's just, I mean, the courtroom scenes too are just very, I mean, the whole movie is very flashy.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Well, that being said, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with more Film Fracas. Thanks for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Before we get back into the action, I just wanted to tell you about a show we have here on the 5208 Media Network called Tap Heads. That's right. Tap Heads is a show hosted by yours truly, Robbie DeShazer, along with Carter Spilliards from Film Fracas and our good friend Wendy Lopez. We get together every other week and we drink a whole bunch of beers and talk about what we like about them, what we don't like about them, what we're learning about beers. There's just so much fun to be had. We've tried a whole bunch of different breweries, a whole bunch of different types of styles of beers. We're just having a lot of fun doing this, and I think that... you guys should go check it out. So right after you listen to the second half of this episode, head on over to anchor.fm/tapheads and go listen to our most recent episode. We had a lot of fun making it, and we hope you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. All right, get back to the action. We're back in Film Fracas.
Whoa.
I didn't know what to say. We're back.
We're back.
We're back, and we're all just
talking about movies. You want to just jump right into it?
Sure. So next
in reverse chronological order.
The docket is Schindler's List?
Schindler's List.
I think.
Yeah, that's the 90s. Yes. Yeah.
93. Oh, wow. My gosh.
So bad. I'm
sorry. This movie is, this is a perfect example of if everyone wasn't bringing it, then it wouldn't work.
Yes, I 100% agree.
And I think it's not only, because you really only have like three lead characters and then a smattering of supporting and then a whole bunch of like featured
a team, yeah, an ensemble of
like a whole ensemble of
an army,
yeah,
of
just some excellent, you know, extras and side characters. featured extras, I guess. But I mean, obviously I can talk about Liam Neeson, Ray Fiennes and Ben Kingsley, who are all, I think, phenomenal.
Yeah.
All really kind of showing up here. But yeah, it's the all the regular people that the fear and the anguish, and it's, you know, the little moments like when they're all around the campfire or the bonfire, talking about like, when was the last time we did this, you know?
Yeah.
Or anything like, or the one who plays Helen Hirsch.
Oh.
Also phenomenal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it's crazy because it's if everyone wasn't performing at the top of their game, then it wouldn't work. And I don't think there are necessarily any weak links. It's just everyone's there and everyone's was, you know, doing the right thing. And yeah, it's like Liam Neeson, I mean, I'll talk about him for a little bit, but I think just astounding, like the complexity when you see him at the beginning, and he's got this, you know, bravado and businessman, all this very charismatic. And then when you see that's how it starts, and then where he is at the end, you know, literally in tears.
Right.
Taking it, you know, pulling himself apart, being like, I could have gotten more, I could have saved more. When at the beginning of the movie, he literally says like, oh, they're all just here to make money for me. That's their only purpose. And at the end to be like, I could have saved more.
Right.
The kind of, you know, the volume and the range that you have here is just crazy. And then you have like, you know, Ray Fiennes does this great, he's not cartoonishly evil, I don't
know. Once again, we talked about this a little bit last week with you can show like the villainous, mm-hmm, of, you know, the Nazis without, but like if you cross into that cartoonish era, you, yeah, get into like video game,
yeah,
and like satire, mm-hmm, territory, which is like not what this film, yeah, needs. Like this is very much about showing you,
yeah,
exactly how horrifying, mm-hmm, it is.
And it's, yeah, whether it's, you know, seeing him just kind of living his life, and you can how you can tell he's just uninterested with what's, mm-hmm, going on. And he, you know, he loves just the torment and the game of it all, not really caring about that these are people that he's, you know, subjugating and torturing. And it's, you know, the whole scene I always think of is the, you know, perhaps you should like try mercy, pardoning people, you know, and then him watching him then go the next day and deciding, oh, I can pardon these people, I'll do that. And then very quickly being like, no, I don't like that. And you get a lot in that, because he could have leaned into the like cartoonish.
I mean, he could have done Voldemort, you know.
He could have done Voldemort. He could have done anything. Like, but this is a very, I mean, it's a flawed three-dimensional character, and you kind of see, mm-hmm, where he's coming from. And I think that all of that, I mean, to give humanity to him, not that he's, you know, good or anything, but to show that he's an actual person, and not just this like cartoonish dark evil.
Right. You know? When your villain is a fallible human being, yeah, exactly, as well, like.
And then, yeah, and Ben Kingsley, I think, is great, giving a very kind of muted, subtle, but you really kind of feel the emotion, especially in the moments with him and Liam Neeson. And I think, yeah, I think everyone here is turning in top-notch work.
Yeah, I would say that this is similar to Birdman, where you have, I mean, so much of it's on the back of your main actor. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, which is, I mean, it falls. Both those movies fall if you don't have, yeah, someone giving a strong performance, whether it's, you know, Oscar Schindler or Regan Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but also to see how the masses, or like those people that are, I guess you would call them, I guess, extras in,
yeah,
both of these movies, are small bit parts, how they act. It shows how much that can support the vision created by, once again, like I said, like the team between a, yeah, director and an actor. Like, and even with, I would even throw a writer in there as well, with, mm-hmm, like the, you know, this has to be so well written and so well directed to be executed so well by Liam Neeson.
Exactly.
And same way I would say with like Birdman, it has to be so well written and so well directed that Michael Keaton can turn in such a performance there.
I'm trying to see who beat Liam Neeson.
Neeson was nominated.
I was going to jump in when Neeson and Ralph Fiennes nominated. Mm-hmm. Kingsley not. I feel like that's so shocking. And then neither of them won.
Hanks was beaten. Liam Neeson was beaten by Tom Hanks for Philadelphia.
So another like
that's stupid.
Decision that was made.
Nah, Liam Neeson's so much better.
Liam Neeson is much better. I don't know if it's stupid.
I mean
once Hanks again, he's
good in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
but like Liam Neeson's so good in this though.
Yeah, I mean this is a side conversation, but. You have to think about how Academy voting works too. It's all preferential ballots. Like
I know. I mean, it definitely is because Tom Hanks is Tom Hanks. But like, that's the thing. Is
well, this was before. I mean,
was this before preferential?
This was before Forrest Gump. Yeah. So he hadn't really done. This is like his first really big Oscar movie.
But is this before Saving Private Ryan too?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Saving Private Ryan was 98. Saving Private Ryan was late 90s.
That's various.
So this is before he was an Oscar darling. This was like the beginning of it because he won back to back for this and Forrest Gump.
I don't know. I still think Liam Neeson was really good.
Have you seen Philadelphia?
Yeah. Why would I say that if I didn't think, if I hadn't seen it?
It's better than being, Michael Keaton losing to Eddie Redmayne. Like it's
I don't think it's egregious, but I do think they both turned in some pretty stellar performances.
I think with our...
Also, Lawrence Fishburne was nominated for What's Love Got to Do with It?
It is also harder, looking back
and
at it from
Lewis.
2020 with... This, with understanding which one ended up standing the test of time and which one is the more important. Because taking into account, Philadelphia was the movie, was a very big about the AIDS conversation and was coming out of the 80s. It's a huge and very important movie. Yeah. For that.
And that's a whole thing about the Oscars about being present day stuff.
Tommy Lee Jones won for The Fugitive, beating Ralph Fiennes for Schindler's List. That I disagree with.
That's ridiculous.
Tommy Lee Jones is good in The Fugitive, but it's nothing particularly special.
Also, kind of a weird dark time for the Academy Awards, too. They had just come out of the 80s where you have some interesting films.
Driving Miss Daisy beating Driving Miss Daisy winning and Do the Right Thing not being nominated.
Yeah.
Also some weird.
You have some interest. Yeah, and I mean, Rain Man is a Best Picture winner from the 80s, but I love that movie. It's a great Saturday, Sunday afternoon movie, but
the entire 80s canon of Best Picture winners are a different mood.
Amadeus though
might be
Chef's Kiss.
Milos Forman.
Yeah.
Do we have on and off decades? Truly think about
100%.
We go from the 70s right into the 80s.
The 70s and the 80s
were crazy strong.
The 90s have some
pretty solid.
2000s
are... The aughts are a little...
Okay. The aughts are... Some of them are making up for some snubs from the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, the aughts are kind of iffy, and then the...
The 2010s were great. The 2010s
were good. Strong.
Other than maybe the last couple.
Green Book.
A handful, yeah. With
Green Book. Are you talking about the winners or the movies?
The winners.
Winners.
Okay.
Not always. I mean,
The Artist.
There's always
don't know
exceptions
how
the artist
is fine,
to.
But, you know.
There's exceptions.
I'm just saying on majority.
If a you survey take 10 of movies, those films.
Yeah. 10 movies at a time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Majority of them are.
Decades are pretty good. 50s and 60s are pretty good.
I don't know if personally the 2000s and 10s part of this adds to y'all's theory because I'm not really. Those kind of feel the same in that some of them are good and some are bad. But I'm with you that the 80s are definitely not.
I would also say the 2010s had some very strong fields in general.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm with you the nominees. The winners is where I'm like, I don't know. Because we still got Green Book and The King's Speech and The Artist and a few others. And I'm just
What is this with Phoenix and slandering The King's Speech?
I love The King's Speech.
I think it's a wonderful movie.
Every time you try to be like, and The King's Speech, am I right? And we're like. Yeah, it's a very good movie.
I'm not the only one who believes this. The King's Speech is, it's okay.
No. I'm like, we don't need to talk about it. Anyway. We're going. But we talk about that in a bonus episode or something. Does anyone have anything else to say about Schindler's List?
I didn't really say anything, but...
Oh, I mean...
It's what y'all said.
I love... Yeah, I mean, this is a movie that's composed off of, you've got your top tier of top-billed actors that do stellar jobs in all of their own spheres, and they're supported by this army of standout extras that really get their day in the sun. I think, you know, when I think about my heart beginning to break and the tears starting to come when I watch this movie, I think of the old man that is saved because he's a valued member.
Yeah.
And he works for Oscar Schindler. And then, like, you know, they each get their chapter. And I think, you know, that's not only very effective, but, you know, giving your extras that much gravitas isn't something that happens as frequently, especially with a cast so large. But yeah, no, it's a challenge to think of a really, you know, nuanced critique of any of the, or, you know, negative critique of any of the acting performances
here. I think the blocking of the girl with the red coat's really bad. But besides that.
But that's...
is that
performance or is that direction?
No, I have nothing to say. I mean, it's what y'all said. It's like everything's good in this.
Why is it a red coat?
Yeah. The actor's choice of wearing red.
Is Steven Spielberg a loyalist?
We'll see.
It's all good. I mean, like, it's what y'all said.
Definitely. Really. It's great.
Rocky.
Phoenix jumps in. Actually, Schindler's List bad.
Yeah. Rocky?
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings about Rocky.
There are some performances I like.
I like,
there are some performances I think are not great.
I like Carl Weathers, and I like Sylvester Stallone a lot.
Yeah.
And everyone else, I can kind of take or leave.
Yeah, it is really funny. You know, I think to just like zoom out, look big picture, I think there's a lot with the characters from Rocky that people remember fondly. And it's not from these movies. It's from the universe that built up around Rocky and you know.
Burgess Meredith also is good as Mickey.
I think Apollo Creed is a great character and becomes a better character as the movies go on. I think same with Rocky. Mm-hmm. I think you develop Adrian and Polly a lot more in Rocky 2 and Rocky 3. Like,
I also don't think any of these characters are terribly complex.
Yeah.
They're all very kind of...
They know their motivation, exactly what they want, and they either get it or they don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Surprisingly, though, it got a leading role nomination, a leading for acting and actress and supporting actor and supporting actress.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, actually, no, two supporting actors, sorry. Two supporting actors. Burgess Meredith and Burt Young, both nominated. Talia Shire, Best Actress nominated. Sylvester Stallone, Best Actor nominated. So not even Carl Weathers. Carl Weathers did not get nominated.
Carl Weathers turns in a fantastic performance.
Really like pretty
Weathers.
Shocking.
He's great. Yeah. He's fantastic.
Two supporting actor roles and neither of them are Carl Weathers. All right, 70s Academy.
Very strange.
Stallone does very... I mean, he wrote it. This was his. This is his baby, and you know, he lives in Rocky space very, very believably and very well.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the egg cracking scene. I'm sorry, but I mean, it works. It works very, very, very well.
And I don't think everyone else is bad. There's no one in this where I'm like, ooh, that's bad. That's not good. But it's very much like, oh, these are like really stand out, and then the rest of these are like.
I'm with you. I think while I can maybe not necessarily, but not personally, like really love like Stallone's performance, not because I think it's bad, but I think it's like you're saying, it's like kind of like, you know, one dimensional or whatever. It's not, there's not much layers to it, but I would also be remiss if I didn't say that like, I feel like a lot of people, especially a lot of Philadelphians, think he really captures a kind of like certain person that they all like relate to and really understand. And so I do like kind of concede that point that maybe he is appealing to an audience that I don't really know well. So
it's like particularly authentic and we're just not really getting that.
And I'm just not feeling it because I don't know the authenticity. Mm-hmm. So I understand that. I think my favorite performance in this is Carl Weathers. Mm-hmm. I really like him as the like, so-and-so villain of the, like, he's the hotshot boxer. I think he kind of plays, he has the charisma in the performance that you need to have for Apollo Creed. And he's got the confidence and the gravitas. And he really plays it up really well. He's for sure, I mean, aside from obviously Stallone being Rocky, but he's definitely someone that you're like, this had to be Carl Weathers. It couldn't have been anyone else. which I appreciate. Everyone else, I'm kind of with you guys that it's like, they're not necessarily bad, but
yeah, Burt Young is Polly.
He
provides a service in this film that I suppose is. I mean, I don't really know if it's necessary, but he exists.
I think Burgess Meredith is maybe the next best.
Oh yeah, Burgess Meredith. I love the voice, mm-hmm. first of all.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one, once again, I think, Stallone and Carl Weathers, like, I think it's also just great to see them come together at the mm-hmm. end of the that fight is so great with both of them. I mean, even though the physicality of it isn't maybe the same as something where you do see every, you know, every bit of that space like you do in Chicago, you know, there are a lot of creative cuts to mask some hits and stuff like that, mm-hmm. too. But also just seeing them both at the end, like that the kind of that final, it's not an embrace as much as it is. They're just leaning on each other, like both just so worn out, so beaten up. And just the, you know, the, that heavy breathing follows, just no rematch. They agree, no rematches. There's not, you know, this is it. We're,
you know, we're calling it immediately after this.
And that, this is done. That moment does feel like you had really built up to something. And it does feel like just a release of energy into like just a big sigh of relief at the end, which is very, I mean, is a testament to the film as a whole, but also I think is a shows off how much those characters, those we invested into those mm-hmm. characters and like how good those two performances were in particular.
Yeah.
But that being said, I don't think that like those two performances are very good, and that's what you need in a boxing movie. I don't know how much the supporting performances really prop up those two.
Mm-hmm.
But this also created the formula for boxing movies pretty much. So it does, you know,
it's very serviceable for
that reason. It does create, you know, how you need to have two intense characters at those, you know, mm-hmm. something that they eventually beat into the ground too, you know, bringing in people like Mr. T and Jean-Claude Van Damme, like just these huge performances from Rocky's opponents. And almost turning Rocky into a stereotype himself in the later movies. But, they create that formula and there's a reason why it works. Mm-hmm. So,
So, The Godfather.
Yeah, this is great.
This is a good movie.
This is nice.
Oh my God.
Like the performances in this movie.
Godfather, another movie where kind of everyone's firing on all cylinders.
Yes. Yeah. Like,
even the background players. Between, you know, Marlon Brando, fantastic. We'll talk about him again. Amazing. Al Pacino, I think maybe Al Pacino's best work in this.
Some
and,
of
and
his
part
best
two.
Work for
yeah.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Trying to think of what else. He definitely hadn't done anything before that was any bad. Well, what year is Serpico?
Serpico was between The Godfathers.
Serpico's, okay.
This is his one of his first big roles.
Yeah. So Brando won for best actor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the famous awards like acceptance with Sachin Littlefeather. This movie had three best actor in a supporting role nominations for James Caan, Robert Duvall, and Al Pacino, which is pretty nuts, but also
all three
deserving.
Really good.
Yeah, all pretty deserving.
Diane Keaton also fantastic.
Yeah, Diane Keaton
is amazing.
Yeah, is really good in this.
Yeah, it's insane. How good everyone is. Tali Shire, also good. John Cazale is Fredo. I mean, once again, gets a little more to do in the next one.
Yes.
But in this movie, oh my gosh.
Wonderful actor.
Crazy
wonderful,
good.
Wonderful actor.
Yeah.
It was a great job. James Caan, Sonny.
John Cazale
fantastic.
Was one who was in five movies, and they were all nominated for Best Picture, and then he died.
And then he died very abruptly.
I mean, did we mention Richard Castellano?
Richard Castellano.
Yeah. Also good.
I'm now just looking down this IMDb list and going, did we mention this one? It's so good.
Yeah.
That's what this movie is.
Robert Vigoda, Rob Duvall.
I mean,
we can list
people's names.
I don't have a weak performance in this movie. I think everyone's there.
I have one.
Yeah?
I have one. I think Al Martino, who's a, I think his name is Johnny. Is it Johnny Fontaine? The Frank Sinatra guy?
Singer, oh, yeah?
Yeah. Not a fan.
I think.
No, because, I mean, he's supposed to be, like, Frank Sinatra, and I feel like he's obviously not in it much, but he's, like, there's, like, two or three scenes where he is in it, and I feel like he's not nailing it. He's not being as charismatic, as, like, interesting, as, like, attracting as I think someone who's being the Sinatra-esque type is mm-hmm. supposed to be. So that's my one flaw. It's one very, very minor character.
Yeah.
But besides that, everyone's pretty great in this movie.
Yeah. I don't even, I think his kind of...
Is this one of those where everyone else's performance is so A-plus that you don't even... can't even remember.
That could be it. I mean, I think Al Martino, I don't even think he's an actor. I think he was like...
He was a lounge singer.
Well, I forget the story or something, but I feel like I've read something where he was given the part because of some relationship with somebody or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he's like... Because I don't know if his filmography is even big after this.
It's not.
Yeah.
His big break was...
if you can call
it
that.
Godfather.
Yeah.
But I don't think, he doesn't have an extensive filmography on IMDb either.
Yeah, because I think he wasn't even an actor. I think he got it as a relationship for something. But, especially being around, some of the best actors of our time is, also not helping that he's maybe not that great.
This is if I were teaching an acting class, this would be something I would show just in general to teach people how to react to what they're like. So much. I think of the subtleties in this and how people, take in information, watching the characters take in information, process it, seeing how they react, seeing those moments that they, mm-hmm. So much of it is done. So much of the acting is done in those little moments right there. And I don't think there's necessarily any in this list, but there are so many movies where if you see somebody mid conversation, they aren't acting. They're just waiting for their turn to say their line. And it's not always obvious, but this makes it look obvious because you just see how everyone is living in this world. It's this is a film that is very meticulous. This is not shot in a run and gun style. Mm-hmm. Everything is staged appropriately. Mm-hmm. Everything is lit to be very specific. And so to do that and then still have the characters look and feel like this is the first time that they're experiencing this, that this is unfolding before them, is mm-hmm. absolutely fantastic. Watching Michael's, transformation throughout the film is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well said.
Looked up, Al Martino was a crooner, professional singer, ran from the mob, had to leave the U.S. to run from the mob, lived in England for several years, then moved back to the U.S. in the early 60s, and then got a part in The Godfather. And the role is kind of like a Frank Sinatra equivalent, but it also is kind of also his life, too. So it's not exactly supposed to be like Frank Sinatra.
Right, okay.
Do
y'all have a favorite performance?
Oh. In this?
Yeah. Al Pacino.
Probably Pacino. Pacino or Brando.
I'm between Brando and Khan. I really
James
love
Khan. Also
Khan.
Really good.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. He's so Diane eccentric.
Let's list actors again.
I just feel like we're not, because it's so, there's so many good things, we're not talking about it, but it's because everyone's really good.
Yeah, no, Brando, I really love. I also, I'm trying to think of who. Yeah, I'm partial to James Caan as well. I also think Duvall does quite a good job, and I like how he provides that perspective of being the non-Italian, who's the surrogate Italian, but also, he's always skirting the line between being member of the family, but not the right. What is he? He's the consigliere. Yeah. In the wartime, I quite enjoy that.
Yeah.
Those three. But if I had to narrow it down, it would probably be Brando and Khan as my two favorites.
I agree.
I think the other thing that works so well in this movie is just how you do a dinner table conversation, and I've been mm-hmm. seeing so many of them because of all of the the rapid cuts and reviews of Fleabag season 2, but being able to do a really nice, dinner table sequence and then do it, time and time again at all of the biggest points, right before Michael shoots the police officer and the other character that he's eating with when he's in Italy and they're having, the courting period with Apollonia's family. To James Caan finding out, I guess, again, that Connie's husband is abusing her, not only verbally, but then physically. It just, all of that unfolds in a really small space. And I think you have to be really confident in the people that you're acting with for that to, you know, mm-hmm. not stepping over everybody, making that believable, you know, while you've got like half of your body visible, you know, constrained movements. It just, I think it, I'm always impressed by how that's done so well in Godfather.
Yeah.
Godfather pretty much, I mean, I don't know where else we see or what the genealogy is of like really well acted eating sequences, but like this is definitely a chapter mm-hmm. in that book of how to do it well.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Shall we move on to our last
film? We have our last film, On the Waterfront.
Could have been a contender.
I have mixed feelings about this. I really do like On the Waterfront, but mm-hmm. I think having considered it from an acting performance perspective, I'm reminded of like how much I really love this movie because of the story and maybe not, you know, because of the names that are associated with it. Although I think Marlon Brando does a fantastic job, as well as the mob union boss, whose name I forget, but who was also in 12 Angry Men. They're both really, really good. But
Lee Cobb.
Yeah.
Thank you. But I mean, I don't weigh in.
This is another one where I think mostly everyone's fine.
It's like it's not...
It's very serviceable. Like, everyone props up the story. No one other. I would say Brando shines in a way that only Brando can. And, you know, at his.
Because he's more than Brando.
Yeah, at his. Yeah. You know, yeah, probably his peak. It's hard to say it's his peak. Like,
it's a high point in his young career. Aside from, like, Streetcar.
I think Brando turns in, you know, some excellent work. I think, Lee J. Cobb. Johnny Friendly's good. I think Rod Steiger is as Charlie. I think also good. There aren't that many like characters in this movie. A lot of them are background. I think this kind of like Schindler's List, not as good as Schindler's List, but in that the background characters are doing what they need to do to make it feel very kind of lived in.
Yeah.
Like this is a living, breathing world. These people are kind of going about their daily lives, doing their thing. And I think it accomplishes that really well. I think it could have done it where it would have been either you don't really feel like you don't feel the authenticity of this world.
Yeah. There are other films from this era that feel like
very stage production
where you know, watch your main character walk to one person's house and then that person ceases to exist until they appear on screen again. Like there's no,
and I think this movie has a lot of, I think the performances that are front and center are all strong, and I think that it has a lot of that kind of background acting that I think it does pretty well. I don't think it's the best, you know. I think, like I said, Schindler's List does it better, and I don't think.
And I would think that compare it to like Schindler's List or Birdman, where so much, you know, you have a lot of actors who do just inhabit the world, and those people really feel.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone's, you know, being too like hamming it up or being bad or not even mad. I think everyone in here is pretty strong. Those that actually do something, but not really a big movie on women.
you say that. Oh, like, Eva Marie Saint won Best Actress Oscar.
Yeah.
For this. Interesting.
Also, Marlon Brando won. Also, three more acting nominations. Lee J. Cobb, Carl Malden, and Rod Steiger. This movie
Carl Weathers won for this, but
not Rocky.
Not for Rocky?
This movie had five Oscar nominations. That's wild. That's like,
that is kind of,
that doesn't
wild.
Happen. Like,
I mean, Ilya Kazan was attached to this film and, you know, wrote a lot of it in part for what he had to present, you know, as part of being blacklisted. So maybe that also helped gain traction for some of these actors as well. But I don't know how much of... I'd be interested to see what the politics of like the 1950s was. But
The Eva Marie Saint win is surprising, though. I don't know the other movies around that time that could have it was competing. I'd have to look it up.
I mean, she doesn't do a bad job in this movie, but she
jump into it. Really.
Yeah. No, I was just bringing it up. But I think, I mean, Brando's incredible. I agree with you guys that Lee Cobb is also pretty great in this. I really enjoy.
Who plays Terry's brother again?
Rod Steiger.
Rod Steiger.
Yeah. Okay. I also.
He's quite good.
Yeah, I also really like him in this.
that driving scene alone between the two of them, I think, really cements his.
Yeah. Like I said, there just aren't that many characters.
Yeah. I'm
trying to think of how do y'all feel about the priest or the father character? That actor.
He seems a little more theatrical, especially when they're in the bar and he's like, you know, there's ways to get around this. There's courts for this, you know. But he also like goads Terry on to like walk and, you know, do it on his own and nobody can touch him to, you know, at the very end of the movie. So, I mean, he's useful. I don't really, he's not a standout to me, I suppose, but he is very, he functions well and importantly.
Yeah. I would say he's probably the only one that I would think actually like overacts or overperforms in this.
I agree with that.
I think it's also because, I mean, almost all of his scenes he's paired up with Marlon Brando, who's like so incredible at performing a subdued, a almost perfect movie acting type of role, whatever. But I think he's probably my main like slight. Yeah, along with, you know, the extras maybe not being so impactful, but that's about it.
Yeah.
All right.
Rankings.
That's all seven of our films. Now we go through our rankings. I'm curious to see what y'all's are.
All right. Number ones.
Our conversations actually changed some of my rankings around.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I feel very secure in what I have.
Okay.
Now.
Yeah, I like my list.
Okay.
My list actually hasn't changed.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Somebody isn't open to discourse.
Stubborn much?
My number one was Schindler's List.
My number one was also Schindler's List.
My number one is The Godfather.
My number one is Schindler's List.
Whoa.
Okay,
whoa.
So...
The number one is Schindler's List.
Schindler's List. Okay. My number two was The Godfather.
My number two was Chicago.
My number two was Birdman.
My number two is Birdman.
Okay. So
my number three is Birdman.
My number three is Schindler's List.
My number three is The Godfather.
I have The Godfather at number three as well.
Okay, so maybe The Godfather 2?
Godfather 2, because you have it at 1, and I have it 2, and they have it at 3. And
so
then
Birdman
at 3.
Okay. Yes. Schindler's, Godfather.
Because I had Birdman, because y'all both have it at 2?
Yes. Well, I have it. No, not, we have
Birdman
it at 2.
You have it at 2. Where do you have
I have it at 4.
Okay. I have it at 3.
2, 2, 4, 3.
So then, yeah, it would be third, right?
Yes, depending on where we have Chicago, but...
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I think I'm the wrench in the...
Yeah, so then Birdman at 3.
Okay.
Did everyone say their number 3s?
Yes, we're on 4.
Okay, what's your
My number 4 is The Departed.
Okay, mine is On the Waterfront.
Mine's also On the Waterfront.
Mine is Birdman.
Right.
So let's see what our number 5s are before we figure...
Okay. So my number 5 is Chicago.
Okay.
My number 5 is On the Waterfront.
Mine's The Departed.
I have The Departed at number 5.
Okay.
So that should be On the Waterfront at 4, The Departed at 5?
Maybe?
Or Chicago.
Where do y'all have Chicago?
I have Chicago at 6.
I also have it at 6.
Two.
You have it at 2. So 2. Hold on. Chicago's at 2.
Insert plus math.
I have it at.
To me, this sounds like we know what our 7 is.
5.
You're right.
Let's not bring that up.
Yeah, we
sad
have
trumpet fanfare.
And then what was the other one we were asking about? The Departed?
Yeah.
Departed.
I've got it at 5.
I've got it at 4.
5 plus 5 plus 4 plus I have it at 7.
Oh, so we didn't all have it at last.
Oh.
What, The Departed?
No, we didn't all have.
No, yeah, we didn't all have the other one at last. Yes, so by that
But I believe
logic,
it's still when we say it has three at the bottom.
So Chicago would go above The Departed, right?
So what's that number?
So Chicago would be 4?
Okay.
Okay.
And then,
no, wait, Chicago would be 4? I thought we already had our 4. I think we had 4. On the Waterfront at 4.
On the Waterfront's at 4. Chicago's our
5. The Departed is number 6.
Because y'all have Rocky last.
We all have Rocky last.
Yeah, and I have Rocky next to last.
Okay.
I just like Sylvester Stallone.
So just rattle out the list again for the listeners.
So beginning to end, it's Schindler's List at number 1, The Godfather at number 2, Birdman at number 3, On the Waterfront at number 4, Chicago at number 5, The Departed at number 6, and we're saying goodbye
to Rocky.
Rocky
at number 7, which is unfortunate because it's a good movie.
It is.
They're all good movies.
Yeah, they are all good.
They are all the best.
What was that? That felt like a slight to some movie we've.
Rocky's just a very crowd pleasing movie.
It is.
But, you know,
it's fine.
You know, just like the movie. You know,
it's
Rocky
a good
loses.
Yeah, Rocky did lose. So farewell, Rocky. You got
gone, but never forgotten.
What did we decide? They got the wrong name called and had to get off stage. You got your wrong name called when you weren't actually
too
Best
many
Picture.
Girl Scout cookies that Jimmy Kimmel brought out,
and then
they got a tummy ache and died.
They had to leave.
Should we change? Should we do it like the different, like for everything, like last time? Or we just change it every time?
We change what happens.
What happens?
Yeah, I feel like Rocky.
Okay.
You know, bought an orange at a market and then
got gunned down.
Oh,
oh no!
So what?
Poor Rocky.
I was thinking more like, you know, took the selfie with Ellen, but got cropped out of Instagram's.
That's funny. I like that too.
They got trampled by Christian Bale jumping in.
And Jennifer Lawrence, sad.
They tripped on the way to accept their award, and then, but they just kept falling. They haven't stopped to this day.
That was pretty good.
Anyway. All the way to Adrian.
Which also works for The Godfather, because he's like the guy that gets shot outside of the church. And he's like,
oh yeah.
Love
yeah.
that shot.
So yeah, that's our show.
Yes.
Our winner, Schindler's List. Goodbye, Rocky.
Goodbye, Rocky.
Let's wrap up and get out of here.
All right.
So you can find me on Twitter at CA Spillards, like Spillism, New York, and NS, also at Letterboxd at CA Spillards. My recommendation this week is a current show on HBO. It is technically season 2. But also kind of being billed as its own show. It's Paolo Sorrentino's The New Pope. The New Pope. Season 1 of the show was The Young Pope. This is technically season 2. But
oh,
it's
the
also
movie in the middle is The Two Popes.
Its own thing. The Two Popes is good, but that's not what I'm recommending. Two Popes got excellent performances from Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce.
That's not what you're recommending.
It's not what I'm recommending. Sorry. But yeah, The New Pope, it's got, yeah, it's, man, if you haven't watched The Young Pope, it's good. Jude Law, amazing. It's got some crazy, I'm trying to remember the actor that plays Vaiello, who's front and center this season and fantastic. John Malkovich, also fantastic in The New Pope. Silvio Orlando plays Vaiello, who's also a big character in the first season. But yeah, just excellent. It's got some great commentary on like the Catholic Church and faith in general, and then also just kind of like it's very kind of absurdist in everything they do, and I just, it's phenomenal, just spectacular. So check it out, HBO. It's not TV.
All right, I am at Bomb S Phoenix on Twitter and Letterboxd. Hope to tweet things you like. Mentioned last week that I'm doing a Letterboxd list every week, and I'm posting it on my Twitter and then obviously on my Letterboxd.
What's your most recent list?
My most recent list. So at this point, there will be a new, when you listen to this, there will be a new list. But my most recent list that I've just done now as of recording is I ranked all of the Film Fracas winners from seasons 1 through 8. So I know if you're listening, you're a fan of Film Fracas. So I highly check that out. You can see that, Prisoner of Azkaban is the worst winner, but
Phoenix also doesn't like the Harry Potter movies.
That's not that I don't like them. It's just I don't remember anything about any of them, and which don't care to rewatch them. So.
So that would almost imply that you don't like them.
I mean, you said it.
If
not
you
me.
Don't remember them and you don't care to watch them again, that is almost the definition of not liking something.
I didn't say it. You said it. So that's all I'll say to that. My recommendation this week. I'm gonna recommend. I've been sick all week, and I watched one thing, and Carter was there for it. So I'm gonna recommend Burning Love.
It's good as hell. Let me tell you,
it's hilarious.
It's all on
show
Pluto.
On Pluto TV, which if you don't have, you can have because it's free. So you have no excuse.
Got a wild catalog on that app.
It's got 3 seasons. It's basically a Bachelor parody, Bachelor satire. Mm-hmm. So, and it's just a lot of fun. Just a lot of comedians in it. Ken Marino, Michael Cera, Paul Scheer, Michael Ian Black, June Diane Raphael. A lot of comedians you really enjoy. Comedic actors. So yeah, check that out. It's hilarious.
All right. Shannon?
Hey guys, you can find me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Wide and Nerdy. W-E-I-D and Nerdy. I kind of have gotten into Twitter semi-recently. I've had the account since 2014, I'm only engaging with it.
She tweets now.
You tweet now?
I retweet things, and sometimes I'll say a few things about the San Antonio Spurs. We'll get there. It's okay.
Let's not bring them up right now.
Yeah, my last thing that I commented on was a retweet of the San Antonio Spurs talking about their guilty pleasure movies, including Easy A and the Twilight Saga. And yeah, it's good stuff. But I'm going to be recommending this week. I don't know if we've recommended it, but honestly, I don't care. This one really blindsided me with how much I loved it. WALL-E 2008. Never seen.
WALL-E?
Great.
WALL-E's so good.
Yeah, it's fun.
Absolutely never seen it. But it was on my, 100 movies, best picture list or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I gotta, see WALL-E. I'm sure it'll be fine. Oh, man, y'all.
Wait, you're telling me Pixar turns in good product?
What? Well, and the thing is, I just saw Hello, Dolly 2, and that musical motif is like all of WALL-E, and it was wonderful. Disney Dystopia. Really, really, really dumb.
Jeff Garlin is great in that movie as the captain, which is one of the only speaking parts, I always love me some Garland.
So. Also, yes. Fred Willard is like live action, like the weird flashback. Strange.
I kind of crawled out from under my rock there, but go rewatch WALL-E because I'm pretty sure most of
Have you seen the other classic Pixars? Have you seen Up and Ratatouille?
Yeah, I've seen Up, I've seen Ratatouille. Love Ratatouille.
Seen all the Toy Stories?
I've seen Inside Out. Incredibles. I didn't see... Oh, yeah. I've seen all the Incredibles. Good Dinosaur, was that a Pixar or was that a Disney animation?
It's a Pixar, but it's fine.
Okay, I haven't
I haven't seen
Bug's Life?
Yeah, I've seen Bug's Life. Also
that movie's
seen Ants.
Canceled now, though, because of a prominent Kevin Spacey role.
That's true.
Shading on that, but yeah.
I never loved Bug's Life, but it is good.
We didn't do American Beauty this season.
You're right.
I wonder why.
Thankfully. Should we just do a canceled season?
Sure.
Honestly, that would be a lot of fun. But Robbie,
you can find.
Hey, there's some good people who made the rest of those movies.
It's like Annie Hall and
American Beauty.
Annie Hall, American Beauty.
Yeah, that'll be on the, if we ever do a Patreon.
Is there an R. Kelly vehicle?
Oh, God. All right. Anyway, Robbie.
Trapped in the closet.
You can find me for the third time.
Yeah.
Well, just actually, the cancel season is just the Woody Allen season.
I'm about to mute you.
You should.
All right, Robbie, for the fourth time.
You can find me on Twitter and at Robbie DeShazer. You can find me on Letterboxd at Robbie5208. I'm going to try and post there more. As always, remember, I'm going to plug the show that's coming up February 22nd at Cold Town Theater here in Austin, Texas. Please come see King Guillotine and All Men Present. It's Your Funeral. Very excited for that. Listen to Tap Heads as well. That's our other podcast with me and Carter. This week, I'm going to recommend something I actually watched this morning. And for the first time, I hadn't seen it. I think it was the first time I probably watched it in full. It's been a long time since I watched parts of it. But 1951's Alice in Wonderland. If you haven't watched the original Alice in Wonderland cartoon, do it. It's so good. It's so trippy. The animation is beautiful. Like, there's just so much going on there. And, I kind of thought, I had known everything that there was to know, like, the aesthetics of it and, the general, story, I guess, but it's a lot of fun. It was a very good watch, very pleasant watch. So I was very pleasantly surprised when I decided, as I was scrolling through Disney Plus, to put that on. So
this might be the first time two animated films got recommended at the end of the podcast.
Maybe
I'm trying to think.
I'm a nerd like stats. Sorry,
advanced statistics.
Yeah,
go through all the episodes.
What are our net ratings?
We used to have a spreadsheet. Podcasts.
Yeah, but Brett has control of that spreadsheet.
Hey, guys, it's me, Brett.
When are you going to give us it, Brett?
Brett. I think he stopped updating it.
When he doesn't listen to the show anymore.
Exactly.
But okay.
What are you talking about? He can't listen. She's right here.
Hey guys, it's me, Brett.
Yep, there he is. You want to say anything else?
Fuck off.
Oh, wow, all right. A really good Brian Cox impression, Brett. I'm impressed.
It's impressive.
Hey guys, it's me, Brett.
But anyway, that's our show.
Yeah, that's our show. We'll be back next week with another episode. We'll be back.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thanks to Carter Spilliards, Phoenix Arola, and Shannon Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever it is you listen. It really does help get the word out about the show. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. Media.